Are you gonna go first? Or am I gonna go first? Hey, welcome back. It's been a minute. Behind the Bar podcast. Wow, last episode was December, Maxime.
We've been busy.
We've not been doing a good job of.
We've been busy.
Yeah, we've been busy. You know,
last episode was like 3 episodes worth of content as well.
It's facts. An hour and a half. Let's not go to an hour this time.
No,
the fans get mad.
Yeah,
bro, they'd be like, I want to listen if this is too fucking long.
No, that's fair, bro. It's like when the YouTube video get too long to conceivably eat.
Yeah, well, you know who we are already. I'm Emre.
I'm Maxime.
We are Behind the Bar music podcast where we pick an album, dissect it, pair it with a drink, get a little tipsy. We'll see what else happens.
I found out today when you sent me that shit, there's like some bro on Reddit who did the same shit as us.
What do you mean?
Like the guy, the drink you sent me.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, like bro's like whole username is like mixtape mix drinks or some shit.
I found there's this brother-sister duo in like Philadelphia that made a book that is exactly what we do. They pick like 70 albums going back to like the 1930s and they pair each side of the album, like track side A and side B, with a different cocktail.
They'll be hearing from our lawyer shortly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, without further ado, so the albums we're doing today, it's a bit of a soul theme.
So this is the season finale, we're going to say. It's the end of Emery's time as a student.
And as Maxime's roommate.
Facts, bro. We will no longer be living and constantly playing Behind the Bar podcasts as we reside together. Yeah, 24/7.
It's crazy. Like, I come home and you're listening to the podcast on full blast, and then like you come home and I'm listening on full blast.
Like, that's all it. We do like, is I know, like when I go to school, it's like the as the podcast fades from the speaker as I walk away, I put it in my AirPods and then make sure I keep up.
Yeah, and it's like I'll be at the gym sometimes and people come up to me and they're like, "What are you listening to?" And I have to like confess that I'm listening to my own podcast. It's like kind of awkward.
Us and the Pakistani bros.
And yeah, and the Pakistanis.
Do you think they're real? Like, I don't know.
It could be bots. It could be real people. Maybe they're trying to learn English, you know? I find it to be a really effective way to learn English.
I really wish that there's just some burn Pakistani going, man, I love it. Emre and Maxime just dropped another episode.
Please send us fan mail, bro. Hack my computer. Leave me a message.
Find a way. Oh, my God. The pick we used last time was crazy.
Oh, it was. Oh, really was.
Holy crap. Two times ago.
the AI?
Yeah, I think. That's funny.
Okay, well, the two albums we're doing today, the first is going to be... What is it?
The Soul album, Otis Redding.
Shout out Otis. And the second one is What's Going On, Marvin Gaye.
A classic, bro. Two classics, in fairness.
Two very classic albums, yeah. From very, very popular soul singers. The Marvin Gaye album has been on repeat for me, definitely. And I think Otis is a...
On and off, but like I'll say for the past like few months, definitely I've kept going back to it. I've been listening a lot to it, Chill Things. I think like Cigarettes and Coffee, I think might be one of my top songs of the year. We'll have to see later on, but it's up in the running for sure.
No kidding. I did trivia last night, and guess what one of the questions was?
Tell me.
It was, what was the first year that Spotify released Spotify Wrapped?
Oh my God, 2012?
Too early, actually. We were all guessing too late, but you're too early.
What was
Give
it?
Give another
like,
guess.
14? 16?
2016. 2015, wow. The first year they did it, but it was called something else. So 2016 was the first official. I'd guess like 2018.
When did Apple Music catch up?
Maybe 2 years later, like 2018, 2019. No, couldn't have been that much longer. Anyways, do we want to give a life update? Let the people know what's going on?
Yeah, well, let's talk about the drink, have a cheers, and then we can hop in. You want to let us know what we're drinking on?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a Ronye West. Can't tell you how I found this. I was like in the depths of like liquor.com looking up random bullshit.
We were like 3 minutes into a Google search.
Yeah, it felt like a bunny hole, you know? It felt like that rabbit.
It did a little bit though.
But it is half a beer, shot in half of Aperol, orange juice, and bitters. So.
To summer, man. It smells like summer.
Not half bad.
It's interesting.
It's not offensive to me. It's got a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of... I don't know. I couldn't really tell you. It's interesting.
It's definitely interesting. I don't know if I'd be like itching to come back to it, but...
No, I don't think so. The beer we're using as well for this... I'm not telling this story. No, this is ridiculous. We went to a wine bar.
He's telling the story. He folded just like Ronye.
Just, I'm not going to say what kind of doctor it was.
It
was a Jewish... No. We go to this wine bar and they had their own custom beer. Like, is custom the right word? Like, they had a partnership with a brewery. Made to order?
No, something.
Proprietary beer. Like, they had a deal with a brewery, a local one, that made a beer just for them. Exclusive to them. Exclusive beer. Yeah.
We got the same spot.
And it was so good. I was also drunk. And so I begged the bartender who was hosting us to let me order. Well, I guess he's like the resident sommelier, if you will. To let me buy a six-pack off of him at a discounted price. And when he brought me the POS, it was not quite the discount we had discussed. But at that point, you're like in too deep. So I like
you drunk. Can't say no.
I put my credit card. I was like, damn, that's an expensive six-pack. Anyways, it works in the cocktail. So fuck it. You know?
It tastes good, bro. It's the world's most expensive Miller High Life.
Yeah. thank you, Billy, for listening, man. Shout out you.
I'll plug Billy. If he buys my meat slicer, I'm going to let him know.
I bet. Well, Maxime is looking to trade his meat slicer for the same beers.
Yeah, if you want, because I'm looking to get 48 of them. man, so how you been?
I'm chilling. I'm graduating. I've got an internship lined up for the summer, and then I'm just going to fuck around, explore, travel after that. So, yeah, just doing my thing. What about you?
I'm not graduating.
Yep.
But I am going to internship for the summer. I'm going to be chilling, hanging out. We both going to be in Montreal, which means more episodes.
Yeah, don't think it's over.
Don't think it's over, bro. I got a few more weird albums we have to cover. I don't think we've done a Chief Keef album properly yet. Or did we do Finally Rich?
I thought we... No, we didn't.
Unless we did in a Gauntlet.
I don't think we did. I don't think we've done Chief Keef. So we'll run that.
Yeah, or something else.
We'll get Simon on for that one if you want. Yeah. Simon, if you're listening, let us know if you want to join.
I'll tell him, bro. You know what I like, though? I like the one Chief Keef Thoughtbreaker, bro. Thoughtbreaker, a crazy tape.
He likes that one, too.
But yeah, man, that's it. Hanging around. What you been listening to lately, Emre?
Ooh, good question. Man, earlier this year, I kind of hit like a bit of a wall with the music listening to. Like, nothing was really sticking to me.
2 weeks of silence in the apartment.
Not so much that, but it's like, you know when... Oh man, and the worst time for me to hit, too, it was like during final season, where it's like, you just don't know what to listen to. Nothing sounds right. You can't study it. Like, jazz was just not hitting the same. I was trying to get into disco. It wasn't working. I was trying to get into, like, techno and house. Wasn't working. Thankfully, I came out into the new year listening to a ton of soul music. Just an absolutely ridiculous amount of soul. Been getting into a lot of like funk. It's really been like 70s for me lately, like 60s, 70s, just killing it. And I haven't really gone anywhere since then. Obviously, I explore a little bit, but it's mostly that. I can't lie. What about you?
I forget when the last time like I left it off, so I forget where I was at the moment. But I'd say in the new year, definitely surprisingly, a lot of reggae, older shit, Bob Dylan, big Bob Dylan moment. Mm. So Bob Marley and Bob Dylan, something about the Bobs, bro.
Something about them. I do
want. Yeah.
I want to give a special shout out real quick to Cecile.
Shout out Cecile.
She lightweight been putting me on.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, she sends me shit and it's like damn fucking good.
Okay.
And I'm like, how you find this? She'd be like, I just be curious. And I'm like, I am not. She can't keep it. Like,
Stop saying. Tell you what, bro. I'm gonna give an equivalent shout out to my source of putting me on Spotify DJ. Shout out DJ X Low Key. I've been fucking with him, bro. It's been he been doing me right.
Yeah. All right.
That's what I got.
I think without further ado, let's get into this one, right?
Yes, sir.
So, do you have any background on this album for us?
We start in Otis.
Yeah.
Actually, good transition with the DJ. DJ love to give samples.
Yeah.
Like if you like a hip hop track, you know, and I'll be liking a lot of them. He love to give you the sample, right? And he won't even say it's because of that. He'll just be like, "Here are some things I might think you might like," and then you listen and you're like, "Holy shit! I recognize the melody. I recognize the drums. Whatever it is." And so there's a bunch of Otis samples in hip hop these days. Cigarettes and Coffee is the start of Modern Slavery.
That's what it was.
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember off the Travis Quavo album, and then like Kanye's got Otis. And there's a number of other big tracks. So I think I got put on because of DJ. I checked out the album, and I just really been liking it, bro. It's an easy, fun listen. And I like Otis Redding got a very distinctive voice. I think it's a lot of the draw. And so I like that kind of like rough texture he's got going on there. And then, as I was saying, I've been listening to a lot more like, I think, chill music. I'd be feeling like I come home at in the evening and listen to music. And then I want something a bit more relaxing. And so I've been fucking with that.
Yeah, speaking of DJ, I've been fucking with the Daylist a lot on Spotify.
Daylist's interesting. Daylist's cool, bro.
Daylist's weird. Anyways, I've got my own theory about the sample thing. I don't think that Spotify knows it's the sample of a song that you listen to. I really think that it plays on the demographics. It knows that you listen to a lot of hip hop, and there's a, you know, group of people that listen to a lot of hip hop and are also into the jazz and the soul and listen to the samples, and it's saying because you listen to hip hop, you'll probably like these songs as well that these people listen to. I don't think Spotify is like that good to recognize samples.
I got my own theory. I got my own competing take, right, which like again, it's interesting. But I did a project last summer on Spotify, developed some skills in like Python and other stuff, like data driven. I got my history and did some stuff with that. But I found out that Spotify has these like metrics. They call it like acousticness, liveness. Like there's like 6 or 7 of them that it just ranks numerically, and they're like a measure of some aspect of the musicality of a song. How much like word is there versus instrumentals and all that. And I wouldn't be surprised if like, you know, a song that heavily samples another song might have some patterns that line up in terms of like, you know, rhythm or mood or like temperature kind of vibe. And so I think that might be the factor. Now, you know, the song and the sample have to share enough. If it's too sped up or too chopped up, you're not going to get that. And the Spotify DJ has to be smart enough. But I don't know. I think there could be something there.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. And that's an interesting theory too.
Should we start off?
Let's go.
I'm going to say, like, the whole... So I think we're not going to go track by track. I think that would be a little tough on time. So, I'm going to give, like, a little overview, and then maybe I'll hop through most of the tracks rather than all of them.
Sure.
Otis Redding, kind of a simp on this one, bro. In the best possible light. Like, all the love songs, it's like he's on about his woman. But I can back it, bro, because with his voice and just, like, the vibes of the beat, I can really get behind it. But we really see this in Just One More Day, like, just the intro. It's like the lyrics are almost sad. Like he's trying to like prove his love. He's like, just give me one more day. Like, you know, I'm gonna show you how much I love you. Like, we'll find a way to like, you know, vibe out together. It's not quite sure exactly what the scenario is, but this is like this longing. And the part that gets me that I think is really cool. I don't know if it's like conscious or if I'm just like taking it out too much, but it's like he's pleading for more time, like one more day. But the music just keeps going and getting kind of like bigger as the song develops sonically. And it's like, it's not waiting on him. Like, it's like he's trying to, like, hold the song back and trying to, like, you know, get things to be to have more time. And the song just keeps going. And then when it fades out, to me, it's like it's that. You know, it's like his pleas are being ignored. I think it's crazy.
That's a really good take. I appreciate that one for sure. The first thing I want to touch on is when you're talking about love, I mean, this is the soul and the blues that we're talking about. And it's always love.
Yeah.
Like, there are blues albums that I listen to, soul albums, where it's like there's no topic other than love because it's timeless. There's so many ways to talk about it and sing about it.
Anybody love.
And if you're singing the blues and you're talking about love, it's always something's wrong with the partner, you know? You're trying to fight back for them. And I liked your interpretation of the song as well, especially when it came to, like, the dynamic between the music and the lyrics. It is definitely like, give me a second chance, give me one more day, like, let me prove it to you. And when the instrumentation gets a bit more intense and he really like amps up his voice a bit, to me, that rings that he's just getting more and more desperate, right? Maybe he got his second chance already and he wants another one. He wants another one. He's just like so desperate. Yeah. And it's one thing I want to say. This song and many on this album are very typical in the Otis style. And once you hear it, you really can't let it go. And it's always these deep, drawn-out harmonies punctuated by his, like, sharp, gruff voice, right? You'll hear it a lot on Coffees and Cigarettes, like you mentioned, but it's that, and then it's hurry in the morning. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself there, though.
But I'll say, I noticed that, and I think it's cool, too, is that he doesn't sing in the traditional sense. Like, he'll sing for a bit, but he'll almost, like, kind of, like, catch up to the beat and talk or like ramble and riff, which I think is loads of fun. He'll say the same thing over and over again with just slightly different phrasing or slightly different order and like some different repetition. I think it's interesting.
That's the jazz influence for sure.
Yeah,
that's where blues is coming out of it. It's kind of like you improv, you riff off of it.
And it's
really good that it goes to the vocals as well.
It's growing. I mean, I think it's a good track. It's sweet. His love is growing. He ain't ever gonna get tired of you.
You know what else is growing?
We gonna move on. Hey. You got anything else you want to say about Is It Growing?
It's a great funk and almost disco sound to this track. And so when I was listening the first time, it reminded me a lot of, are you familiar with Booker T and the, what are they called? Booker T and the...
The motherfucker Booker T Washington?
No, Booker T and... And the MGs, that's what it is. Booker T and the MGs.
No, what's this?
They're like 60s or jazz funk. A lot of weird stuff, but they're kind of the precursors to disco. And there's one track on here that really reminds me of one of their songs, Twist and Shout, right? It was kind of like that intermediary period between like swing and disco, and they kind of add their own flair to it because it's got this like plucky electronic guitar. And I discovered, reading on some random Wikipedia page, maybe for a different album, that this group, Booker T and the MGs, are usually Otis's backing band.
Really?
That's I don't know specifically for this album, but they did his last album, the one prior to that. So yeah, the influence kind of carries through, which is really interesting.
That's totally cool.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we've got Cigarettes and Coffee. I mean, it's a classic, bro. It's like, I think it's like, after Doc in the Bay, I think it's up there. Actually, I don't even know if it's in his top tracks. Doc in the Bay gets huge on Spotify.
It wasn't in his Spotify top five,
yeah.
But it's very recognizable to hip-hop fans, of course. That intro is so no. Otis, very Otis.
Is it just Modern Slavery that I'm thinking of? I think it is, right?
It could be. It might be another track as well. I know that one for sure because it just steals the opener.
Yeah.
And it's an iconic opener, you know, you can't do wrong with it.
He outshines the track, bro. You know what I mean? I'm gonna be real.
Yeah.
You pick between Travis, Quavo, Huncho Jack, and the classic Otis Redding, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
sorry,
Trav. And it's a very good song, great lyrics, great message and story.
I love the setting. I think it's a great way of capturing it. Like, right off the bat, I feel like it's like everyone's had the cigarettes and coffee moment. It's like the moment that you don't want to end, right? Like, the whole song, he's like talking about how much fun he's having, how nice it is, how he's so happy to be there with the woman that he loves. But I think, you know, you can even take it further. That sentiment is like being there with, like, whoever you fuck with, you know what I mean? Like the homie or, you know, yo girl. But it's like late, it's like 3 a.m. after the function, you're having a drink, you're having a smoke, and you just don't want the moment to end. You know, he really doesn't want to let it pass. And I think we get the same thing here that I don't know, like, I think maybe it's also just the style, but he fades away still singing. And so he's still talking about like just one more coffee, one more cigarette with me as the song fades out.
That's interesting. I had a very different interpretation.
Really?
I saw this as the breakup.
Really?
Yeah, I saw this as like they're breaking up and they're just, you know, it's the end of the relationship and he doesn't want cigarettes and coffee to end because when the morning comes, she'll be gone.
I can see it. He's a little forlorn in his...
It's soul, you know?
In his voice.
It's very deep.
But I don't know, but I also see he talks about like, you know, because there's one segment in the middle, kind of like the peak of the song. He talks about like wanting her to walk down the aisle. Like, it's almost like it's like, marry me. I don't know if that's like just like a last ditch kind of like, oh, like things are going wrong. Like, this is where I thought it was. But regardless, I think it's not a character study, but it's like a moment study.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. The next track, Chain Gang. I recognize it, of course. This isn't the popular rendition. The original is by Sam Cooke, another really iconic 60s soul artist. But it's still a great song. You know, yeah. I think he does a really good job of like punctuating his voice, transitioning between those like deeper, soulful singing notes and then the almost like playful chain gang kind of hits.
It's a lot more poppy, and especially I think since we've gotten kind of like three, in the very much, the, like you said, the classic Otis style so far, like these long harmonies, these like drawn out things with him kind of like pleading over top. Here we get a switch up because it's, you know, it's not like it's an Otis track, but it's not an Otis track. You know, it's he's running a cover. It's one of like three or four covers on the album.
Well, that's the style.
Yeah,
you know, that's it.
But I found it interesting because I found myself looking them up. We'll get to it later on. But when we hit Treat Her Right, I learned a lot. I really like Chain Gang. I think it's a lot more dancey and it feels a little more like working man's blues. You know, you get the horns that kind of go like dun dun. That are kind of fun.
That's a good song. I gotta listen back to the Sam Cooke version, but it's a really good track.
I don't know if I've heard it, bro. Not recently, a little bit. We got Nobody Knows You When You Down and Out. This your fair weather friends track. This is your like, you know, the homies ain't there for you when stuff is bad, but as soon as you get up, you know, now they're on you. I like it. I don't think it stood out to me as much as some of the other tracks, but I think it's a nice one.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Good listen. Didn't really do much.
The whole album will flow through real enjoyably, but yeah, this is not necessarily one of the standouts for me.
Right. The issue with having a very strong and distinct style is that if you overuse it, the album kind of just goes past. Nothing really sticks out.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, you got the same thing with Dial It.
The tape goes crazy, but I feel like there's like a lot of tracks on Dial It that I would not play individually.
Fair enough. I'm losing you a bit on the analogy, but we'll just keep going here.
The Soul album is to Otis Redding as Dial It is to Playboi Carti.
No, I'm not doing that. What do you think of Good To Me?
I like it. I think we're talking about, like, you know, the blue Something Wrong With Love. I think this is a cute track because I feel like it's not anything wrong. I feel like it's like it's kind of an ode to like the whole thing is like we've been together for 20 years. I want to be with you for 20 more, and then maybe 40 more. You know, I think it really just is the cute like it's like when you see like an old people couples and like the women love like, oh my god, the old people are so cute when they're just together. But it's like that, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's it for me. You get a lot of love songs about spicy new romance or breakups and makeups, but I feel like he's romanticizing like. The comfortable, stable, like long-term relationship, just kind of in a cute way.
Yeah, it was a cute track. I like the next one a bit better, Scratch My Back. She's itching, just scratching, just
spicy.
This is a weird one, bro.
Scratch my back like the cock scratch, you know.
Scratch my back. Yeah.
Where is it? You got one like that, bro? Like
what did you say? Scratch my back.
Like the
black guy don't know where to scratch. Come here, baby.
No. He got one about like the rooster, bro. Just like a rooster, you would know how they scratch it.
Scratch, 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 scratch.
Which thing are you talking about?
Did you just scratch my back? Scratch my back, I scratch your back.
He just itchy.
He just itchy.
He just itchy, bro. After working fleas, all day.
Bro, that's it.
The fleas is crazy.
That's how it goes. Anyways, what was your take on Treat Her Right?
The only time I'd heard this song before, apparently it's a standard, I didn't know that. But the only time I heard this song before is George Thorogood and the Destroyers.
Oh, yeah.
And so I thought it was a George Thorogood track. And like, considering like, for those of you familiar with George Thorogood, I'd say this is a real wholesome one for George. My man is usually more on the, if you don't start drinking, I'm gonna leave. So for him to have ran a Treat Her Right, I thought it was like sweet. Now it makes a lot more sense. It's just kind of a classic. It's not by Otis Redding. I forget who wrote the original. But I like it. I think Treat Her Right fun. I like the George Thorogood track, so I was happy to hear it off this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something that's, I don't want to say like new to you, but maybe a bit unfamiliar. Which is that, like, you know, blues and soul directly originate from the jazz world. And in jazz, there's...
Jazz standards.
There's jazz standards.
Yeah,
and those jazz standards go back to, like, the 1920s and 30s.
Yeah, there's, like, the big band standards.
Exactly.
You know, like, there's, like, even, like, classical music, orchestral music the same way. I ain't too familiar with it, though, because I never, like, play the piano.
Right.
I feel like people play the piano, they learn the standards.
Yeah, but it's more to say that, like, most artists don't really make original music. Like, there's maybe, like, a small, very small handful of tracks, like, two or three on this album that he wrote himself. All the other ones are either written by somebody else or standards or, you know, that kind of thing. But that's just kind of how it was. You know, it was risky writing a song that people had never heard before.
Yeah.
You know, everybody would rather just do a standard. And it's, like, that's familiar. And it's also, that's kind of your mark as an artist is, can you make a standard sound better than anybody else?
I'll say, like, you know, so yeah, you're right. I am less familiar with the standards, but I've seen him a bit earlier in the year and like last year when I was getting into country kind of for the first time because they got the country standards too. I don't know if they're called standards, but you know, classics in the same vein, right around the early times like folk music and the country departure from blues. And I think it is a lot of fun when you have like an album where it's like a mix of original tracks. And the standards, just for that very reason, is like you get to showcase. Like I like some original songwriting. I like new songs, and then it's fun to see too. Like, you know, especially if you do a good take of a classic.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Everybody makes a mistake, man. It's a deep one, bro.
This is the same song as the 21 Savage track off the Metro Boomin album.
What?
What are you talking about?
With The Weeknd, bro. About creeping.
If you creep, girl, I don't wanna know.
You know what I'm talking about?
No. Can you break that down
for me? What track you mean? Look up, it's the latest, like the one with the Heroes in Capes, Metro Boomin. Creepin'. You never heard this.
I have, but like, what's the relationship?
The whole thing is like, on Creepin', he's alright with his like romantic partner, like, you know, potentially being unfaithful or sleeping around because it's like, like, you know, it's kind of the agreement, whatever. And like, I don't like it, but I just don't really want to know about it, but like, go on. This song, the same thing, bro. He talking about, you know, everybody makes a mistake. Like, I know if you out, like, you know, if you staying out and you ain't here too late and you like talking to people, like, you know, it hurt me, but it's how it be. Everybody make a mistake.
Damn, that's a rough one, man.
It's a rough one.
I can't relate, unfortunately.
Man.
I know you could, probably, but...
I'd be out here crying with my girl out past 10:30 p.m.
I'm out in these streets chasing down raccoons. Don't ask...
late hours?
Don't ask where I'm at. I'm not home. I'm touching raccoons.
That's weird, bro.
Any old way, I thought this was a very cute track. Again,
I don't got too much to say. To
sappy, lovey, I'll love you any old way.
All I got on the comment on the last track is he beat Mike Jones to it.
What is the track?
634-5789. His phone number.
That's his phone number?
Well, I mean, that's the one he says in the song is his phone number.
Yeah, and Mike Jones had a track like that as well?
Mike Jones got the, like, he'd be, like, saying his phone number all over his songs, bro. He'd be like, Mike Jones, he'd be like, call me. He'd be saying it, bro.
Shout out Mike Jones, dude.
Who is Mike Jones? And he got, like, the whole thing. He'd be, like, saying his phone number over the tracks, talking about, like, text me.
That's funny. I didn't know that.
I don't know what happened when you text Mike Jones.
It's probably one of those like sponsored, like,
yeah, and it's like someone, it's like,
come watch my concerts. This is Mike Jones. Come buy my merch.
This is Michael Jackson. I'm still alive. I need $500 to make it back from Cuba. I'm in.
Yo, this is Tupac. I'm here with Hitler in Cuba. God,
bro. Man,
I went to Cuba. I didn't see any of them.
You think Fidel Castro is still in Cuba?
Yeah,
he did.
But he's still in Cuba. Like, they buried him there.
Oh, I meant more like in Cuba.
Did they bury him there?
I meant like in Cuba, like Michael Jackson in Cuba. You know what I mean? Like Hitler in Cuba.
Where is Fidel Castro buried? Yeah, he's Santiago de Cuba, where he was from.
Crazy.
Jamie, where was Jamie? Pull it up, Jamie.
Jamie.
It's in Joe Rogan. There's like the guy that just sits at his computer, and so when they have a question. Or, like, something they want to Google. They don't Google it themselves. Jamie, look it up.
Wait, but then how do they have so much, like, not factual information in a show where they have a fact checker?
It's only when they want to pull up, like, images. Be like, Jamie, pull that up.
Show us the pic of the jackalope, bro. Give us the bunny with the, yeah, with the antlers.
Jamie, show me this guy's balls.
pull the Drake leak out. Pull the Drake leak out.
It's literally that.
I mean, that wraps up the album. Before we do final thoughts, Drake interlude. You heard this shit? Like, you know, Grandma's talking about, like, the Kendrick diss on the one song of Drake. You jiggy with the situation right now?
No.
Kendrick apparently, like, dissed Drake, like, proper, bro. Because Drake and J. Cole wrote some song, like, way back in the day. Whatever, they're angry. And then the meme pages started posting about it. Because apparently Drake getting cooked by, like, hella bros all at once. Like, everybody else dropping songs. Rick Ross was, like, coming for him, bro. Coming for Drake's mom, too.
His mom,
because Drake posts like a screenshot like combo with his mom. His mom texts him talking about like it's like Rick Ross like beefing you, like someone beefing you. He's like, don't worry about it, mama. I'm gonna like handle it. And then Rick Ross sent like a picture of like just like his pool, talking about like, yeah, Drake, you don't got no money. Like, look at my pool.
That's classic, Rick.
But all that to be said, Drake dropped a diss, bro. Called Push Ups. It like leaked. I don't think it like came out on Spotify. Like leaked. Like, you know what I mean? It was like released through unofficial channels. Pretty good actually. Drake low key got some energy in him. I used to love like Back to Back, bro, when the Meek Mill beef came out. Back to Back, a crazy track. So I'm just saying, spicy Kendrick Drake beef. People on Reddit seem to think Kendrick has no choice but to respond. So
yeah, people on Reddit.
If you want 14-year-old white boys to tell you about what a grown ass man gonna do in his free time, it sounds like Kendrick gonna drop another track, but we'll
pull
see.
Pull up r/rap.
r/hip hop heads.
That's a good one.
From this album, do you have any notable bars, favorite, least favorite?
Oh, I wouldn't say no notable bars actually, bro. I forgot to write them down.
Favorite, least favorite tracks?
I think, all right, Cigarettes and Coffee, I think, has to take it for favorite. It's a bit of a cop-out, but it stand out. Least favorite, I'd say, like, Any Old Way or Nobody Knows You, just because I feel like they're a little more washed out to me. I didn't, you know, they didn't stand out as strongly. But I'll say honorable mention to Chain Gang. I really, that was a gem that I ain't find until I listened to this album.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Cigarettes and Coffee again. For the favorite, and then least favorite might have to be like Scratch My Back.
Just, you ain't like it?
I liked it. It was just weird,
bro. That's crazy.
It's just too weird.
You're talking about experimental jazz funk, but Scratch My Back is where he draws the line.
My fault.
Your back just not been itchy like that.
I'm not a fan of massages, bro. I don't like back scratches, that type
I
shit.
I guess so.
I will be doing the Turkish hammams when I'm there, though.
The what?
Hammams? The Turkish hammams? It's like the full body baths.
That's crazy, bro. Is it like a hot tub and a cold tub and a...
It's like that, but on crack. Yeah.
Is there olive oil involved?
No, unfortunately not. But I think that they like have somebody that like washes you down. That's what I'm saying. I'm gonna
go be a big Turkish man.
I'm gonna do it with the homie Aryan.
That's a crazy name.
That's his name.
Gonna be a big Turkish man washing down Aryan.
We'll see about that. He's like South Asian.
Yeah, but I
like he not like Aryan, you know.
They just named him that.
But it's like not spelled like that. I was confused. It's like Daphne's friend's boyfriend.
Bet. Have you met, bro?
No.
On FaceTime?
No.
Oh, okay. Swear.
No.
Be hype if you all go.
I'm gonna live with them though.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna stay in the spot. Shout out Nazlit and Aryan.
Oh God, bro. Let me crash at your spot. My boy would have been urban camping otherwise. Yeah. So it's.
I'd have been sleeping in the docks. All right, let's go get this next cocktail.
All right.
We'll be back in three, two, one, and we're back.
Oh man, so fast.
Yeah, it's like we were never gone. Anyway,
we second half of the episode.
Second half. Oh, we're only 30 minutes.
We can't do an hour.
We have to do under an hour. All right, Maxime, what are we drinking? Wait. What's the album? Let me say that part.
You got it, King. You're doing so good.
This next album is... What the fuck, Maxi? Where are those emojis? Oh, my God. This next album is What's Going On by Marvin Gaye.
Question mark. What's going on?
One of the most iconic soul albums of all time. Marvin Gaye is... Like, transcends decades of music. He's such a legendary artist. Very troubled past. But this is really an album that, like... I won't say put him on the map, but, like... Really made him one of the greatest.
It's one of the classics.
It's one of the best. And to go with it, Maxime, what are we drinking?
We are drinking a Rob Roy. It's like a Manhattan, but with scotch.
Yeah, so we got the Ronye West and the Rob Roy.
Cheers. That's almost funny.
Oh, motherfucker.
Whoa!
Dog.
That's interesting.
That's so strong.
The recipe is 2 ounces of scotch, three quarters ounce of sweet vermouth, and a dash of bitters.
You're fucked. What am I drinking?
3 ounces of alcohol in a cup. Like my other favorite drink, the Negroni, it's 3 ounces of alcohol in a cup.
Well, we already decided that we were going to go get Lebanese fast food after this, so nothing matters once I've had this.
Oh God.
Anyways, bit of backstory.
Emre, what's going on?
Marvin Gaye. Guess where he's from?
Chicago,
Washington D.C.
Let's
go. Huge. He grew up, I think, Southeast Washington D.C. or Southwest. There's nothing in Southeast. He grew up Southwest. Southwest D.C., Chocolate City. I think his dad was a reverend or really close to the church, and so he grew up in the gospel choir.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's where all the singing came from. Did a couple bands before he kind of like did his own thing, had a huge commercial success, tons of collaborations, but never really profited from it because his family situation held him back a lot. And he actually died very young. I think he was like 35. His dad shot him.
Damn.
In an argument. Yeah. So
RIP, bro.
Bit of a color to his life. It's just very troubled, very dark. And so a lot of his music, is either the complete opposite and like super upbeat and happy and like, you know, a bit of an escape from his life, if you will. Whereas the other half is very topical, political, social, like deep, man. So that's it. That's my backstory for Marvin Gaye. This is 1971. So the first album was 1966.
Yes, this is his...
5 years later.
Okay.
So 1971, and you can just hear how different it sounds. Like, in terms of the quality of the music, the production, like, it's the same genre, but it feels like it's ages apart, and it's only 5 years, right? You know, like, hip-hop today, 5 years ago, hasn't really changed.
Ah, yeah.
2019 hip-hop?
Yeah, fair. Yeah,
there you go. But soul funk at the time was just changing so rapidly. This album just sounds like markedly different from Otis Redding. So it's really interesting. We're just going to get into it. Did you have anything for the intro?
Not really, man. I don't know. I liked it. We'll get into why in the album.
All right. First track, What's Going On? Super sexy intro.
What is going on?
What is going on? It's really sexy. It starts you off with not quite conversation, but like chatter, which really gives you like an intimate and perfect snapshot of the environment around Marvin. And it kind of lets you know, like right off the bat, like he's trying to talk about the environment, right? Not the physical environment, but
like the state of things,
social, cultural environment.
I'll say actually, and this is just off the dome, actually, I'm thinking now, it reminds me a little bit of the intro to Illmatic. Like, they're on the subway, and there's just a little bit of chatting, mm-hmm. and there's the subway sounds first. I don't know. Curious if the boy Nas was thinking about that. It's entirely possible.
It could be, but I think it's similar in the sense that Nas is also writing a very social, political album. And so he wants you to put you in that space. He wants to
You feel like you're with right the people. There. You feel like you're with the gang. You're with the boys.
Exactly.
You're with the public.
And once you're with them, you understand them a bit better. You see their perspective. That's exactly what he's going for. So you've got this beautiful saxophone that comes through, and it cuts through the talking and then gives way to Marvin's angelic singing. He had a phenomenal voice. Opens up with a very deep political message, talking about mothers crying, brothers dying, you know, just off the cuff, lets you know, like, this is not, you know, love songs or anything like that. It's beautiful and sexy, but it is real as hell. And one thing I really like about this track is that we're... really the first, most of the album is that, but especially this first track is it, he has a really great balance between minimalism and maximalism. You hear that? The snapping and the hand drums are much more aligned and like down to earth with soul and more like folk music. But then he gets these violins that come in, and that's much more maximalist, like powerful energy with it.
And he gets sometimes these I don't know what they call, bro, but like backing vocals of like big like that. I
the
think
choir, yeah,
yeah, the choir that really contribute. But like specifically, it'll be like you said, like sparse but like big. It makes you feel like the piece is big.
Yeah, absolutely. That's that maximalism. It's like that epic quality to it. And then I just gotta say, like his scatting, he's. Great scatter.
Big scat fan.
Huge scat fan. I love a good scat.
Bro. I find it so goofy. He named the second track of the album called What's Going On. After the track What's Going On, What's Happening, Brother. I have like a thought on it, but I just think it's so silly that like for the third time we're like, what is occurring?
Fair. I think there's a very powerful reason behind it. To me, the first three tracks... So the album can be split into thirds. There's nine tracks. The first three tracks are... Sorry, I'll pull it up for you.
Yeah.
My fizzle. It's... What's going on? So there's nine tracks on the album. The first three is like the first sequence, and then you have 4, 5, 6, and 7, 8, 9.
Okay.
And the first six tracks are actually the first half of the album, interestingly enough.
In terms of timing,
because this
is
the era of vinyl, so you have about 15 minutes per side.
Yeah.
So the first 15 minutes is the first six tracks, and the last 15 minutes is the last three.
Yeah, that does check out.
But anyways, the first three tracks is a very... not. I don't want to say it narrows down. So it starts off what's going on. Like, it paints the picture of life as a black man living in a community,
We are living in a community.
We are living in a society. We
live in a society.
It really does try to paint that picture of black society at the time.
I'm assigning you for sociology class, bro.
Whereas what's happening, brother, narrows it down a bit more, and it looks at like interpersonal relationships.
So I was actually gonna say that. So I'm gonna say that, you know, it's effective because I got the same thing. I said like we have a similar tone to what's going on in terms of like we're kind of like confused, surprised, appalled at like what's happening around us. It's a way, you know, of really checking, like there's batshit going on, people acting like it's normal, and the sane reaction should be to be like, what the hell. But on the much more personal level, what's happening, brother, you know? And I think it say a lot.
It does. Life is hard, the circumstances are hard, but no matter what, they're there for each other, right? Yeah. What's happening, brother? It's like, ain't got no work, ain't got no job. But what's happening, brother?
Yeah.
You know, I'm checking in on you. And then sonically, of course, instrumental-wise, the vibe is very similar. You know, a lot of instruments carry over, a lot of...
I was going to say, actually, yeah, you get a very... I can't be using the word parallel structure because I don't know what they mean, but...
Yeah, you don't. But we'll get to parallel structure.
This motherfucker... I'll spoil a bit. I read a little bit of the Wikipedia article by accident.
Did you read it?
No, I didn't.
All right, well, I'll see at the end.
Bro. I might have like long ago.
No, fair. I was just looking for some background because I, like, you know, I'm familiar with Marvin Gaye, but not very much so, to be honest with you. They do push on the concept aspect of this album.
Oh, very strong concept. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Strong thematic tie and track listing, and they do make that point of like this is his Marvin's first real shift away from. From love songs.
Yeah, Marvin's 60s was a lot of like Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Yep.
Like a lot of songs like that where it's like poppy, dancey, super fun, light.
Cutesy. And then,
exactly, cutesy. 1971 comes around and he's like, okay, it's real.
And so the interesting thing is, did you know he got the first title track, What's Going On? It was not written by him.
Really?
Yeah.
Who was it written by?
Oh my God, I forget homeboy name, bro. I feel bad. But another bruh who was on tour in, I think he went to Berkeley, deadass Berkeley, California. And he saw like police brutality, like fuck shit occurring, wanted to write the track. His band was not down. They were like, man, this like, you know, like a protest song, we're trying to do all that.
Right.
And then he was like homies with Marvin and then ended up passing it to Marvin. Not only did he take the song, but he also kind of like, I don't know if the song itself was the... He made it
a Marvin Gaye song.
Yeah, but yeah, that he did. But I'm saying, I don't know if the song itself was the catalyst for the album as a whole, but I think Marvin also been like on that thematic wave right around that time, and so it all kind of primed and came together. So right. That's interesting tidbit for the title track.
That is an interesting one, and it speaks to the era a lot, which was that it was really challenging as an artist to be both successful and also woke or politically conscious.
It really was a statement, because nowadays it's talked about, but it's like it's not that deep. Like if Future came out with like truly like an inspiring political thesis, people would be like, that's fire, but no one would be like, he's brave.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, right, it would absolutely. It would be cool, but it wouldn't be like, oh my God, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. The third track on this album, Flying High. So like I said, we kind of start with this very broad view of society and then looking at interpersonal relationships down to the individual. Flying High is all about getting high.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
That's fire.
That's it.
It's going to be my next smoking song, bro.
Yeah.
Is Marvin Gaye in the Dream Blunt rotation?
I don't know that I understand his personality well enough. I think he's a great singer, but I don't... I read it through his Wikipedia page, and I couldn't really find anything that, like, told me about
what he was like. You're going to start talking about
his dad, bro. Huh?
You're going to get high? You going to start talking about his dad, bro?
I don't know that I want that.
That's what I'm saying.
Sorry, no offense, Marvin.
Man, my dad shot me.
But, yeah, like I mentioned, this is kind of the third song in the opening trio. Very similar. Great segue. Similar instrumental and rhythm. And then, it's really talking about, like, the individual struggles. You know, Vietnam War was happening at the time. A lot of black men were enlisting because they were too poor. They couldn't find a job, so they went to war.
Well, and you had the huge overlap, I think, at the time between, like, the peace movement and the civil rights all happening at the same damn time.
Right.
And
so this song is a bit about escapism, right?
Yeah, you're getting high, you're dodging it.
You know, you're... Yeah, exactly. You don't have work, you're going to war... There's a mention here of going where danger awaits. And you also have this militaristic vibe with like deep, big drums in the back. Almost like a marching band to me, which is what I picked up. And it also has a bit of a darker turn at the end where the lyrics start to talk about the consequences of this escapism, which I thought was really interesting.
I definitely got to run this one back because I like the album listening through. But one, I think, real solid, like,
positive for me or impressive thing for me, but that also kind of made it hard for me to pick out the tracks, was the flow and the transitions are so smooth a lot of the time that I'd often find myself like the next song talking about like where did the last song end.
That's the really interesting bit about this album, is that is exactly that dichotomy. If you don't listen, it's very easy listening.
But it also
splits up. If you do listen, like there's so much there. Like that's why he was the only person that could do it so well. He made a very deeply political album without it sounding like a political
album. You can play this back just in the crib on a Sunday.
And no one will be none the wiser that he's talking about getting high to and before you get drafted in the military because it's the last time you're going
to
smoke.
But I'll say, I think, honest to God, I think the best political albums, or not even political, but like, you know, ideological or like concept albums to me have to have that quality. Otherwise, I think the it comes out like a J. Cole try hard moment. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm thinking about the concept albums that I really love, like, you can play To Pimp a Butterfly, it's jazzy, it's fun, it's soulful, as you cook in dinner. You know what I mean? And then if you tap into listen, you get some crazy tracks. And even, like, Denzel Curry off of Taboo, like, the slow transition into craziness goes so smoothly and so, like, chill that you can have it on and not necessarily be like dialed into the concept.
Absolutely. Striking that balance is really the hardest part as an artist that has something to say. So coming off Flying High, we get into the second third of the album, which starts with starts with Save the Children. And even though it is a distinct third, it does have a very smooth transition into it. And yeah, like you mentioned, it's a very seamless listening to
experience. Is crazy, bro.
Save the Children's a very
This one where it's like song. There's the talking and then there's the singing backing, exactly. Right?
Yeah. It's a soft spoken poetry, and I'd imagine it's both him.
And then he sings to back it.
Oh, and his singing is incredible. It's such a stark contrast. And it really hits home as well, right? Yeah. The message, when it's repeated to you and you hear it in both tones, like, you cannot escape it. Whereas in the first three tracks, like, he's singing in that falsetto, that angelic voice, you can kind of ignore the lyrics. Here, he's telling you exactly what you need to hear.
And I'll say, it's one of my favorite, like, tropes when done well. The talking over the beat. I think, oh god, what was my, I had another example, off the dome. Dire Straits, off of Money for Nothing, has like, a portion where they just talk. And then, I want to say Van Halen has a portion.
Mm-hmm. I don't listen to Van Halen much, so I can tell
you. But I really think that when you have a moment like that where the music continues and the singing goes to, like, you know, spoken word, and you're able to hold the attention, instead of feeling like a weird segment, it feels like, you know, like a hold your breath kind of moment. I think that is like supreme. And yeah. I think it's done wonderfully here.
And it's really something special when they stop singing and they just start talking, because that's when you start listening.
I was thinking about that bar.
No, respectfully, I feel you.
About halfway through the track, you get a bit more random instrumentals, a bit more vocal elements like the choir in the background to keep the listener engaged. And then the voice, the spoken voice, gets a bit more agitated, and the singing gets a bit more wild and crazy, and the drums really pick up. Like, they start going a little crazy, and then you get this very smooth beat change that leaves the spoken voice behind, and Marvin just spreads his wings. Like, he really just starts singing.
That's fair.
You know, kind of going crazy. And there's one bar I want to pick out from this track. Who is willing to save our world that is destined to die?
Is it gonna be you?
And I think that's the magic of it, right? Is it's timelessly relevant.
It's not able either, it's willing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Could be anyone. Listener, listen up. Are you willing? Next up?
Yeah, next track is God is Love. So, like I mentioned earlier, he sang in the choir in the gospel. And so religious themes are very prevalent on his music, and especially in this album. He kind of switches between social-political commentary and religious. Some of the religious songs are better than others. This is one of the better ones. You have a very beautiful piano slide to come in, and it's definitely groovy, funky compared to the first tracks. But it's not too overly religious, which I think is a good balance. You know, he's kind of able to like keep it maximalist enough to beat the gospel allegations. You know what I'm saying?
That's crazy. Beating the gospel allegations is crazy.
Yeah.
Beating the Christian rock allegations.
Yeah, yeah. There's no Christian rock at the time. There might have been.
You know, you're out in the boonies once you hit the Christian rock, bro.
Yeah, on the radio.
I heard that shit for the first time when I was like 7 or 8, bro. I was like, what is going on? My parents was like, oh, you ain't never heard no Christian rock before? I thought it was a meme. I thought it was a joke.
Oh, like a Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
I think my parents likened me to him one time. I think I was on the phone with them not too long ago and they were like, you look like Jesus Christ Superstar.
That's crazy. I gotta see that shit back, bro.
I've never seen it.
Remember the motherfucker, like, it's a movie, right?
Yeah. Wait, it's a movie, it's a play, it's a musical. Like,
yeah,
it's
all sorts of shits. You seen The Book of Mormon?
I have. I saw it at Kennedy Center. Yeah.
Book of Mormon, good.
I think I fell asleep halfway through, though. I'm not going to lie. I was just tired. I was just so tired.
You a fan of musicals?
Maxime.
I'm just saying, like, one last little off-topic moment. You a fan of musicals?
I used to act in musicals.
Oh, that's right. That's true. That's true. Do you like them, though? I feel like some people, like, you know.
I've gravitated away from them. I kind of just prefer, like, non-musical theater now.
Oh, I'm saying, like, in the realm of music rather than the film and theater. We're a music podcast.
Oh. Like musical soundtracks.
Yeah. But like, I mean, the songs are an integral part of the musical.
Of course, right. But like the people that just like listen to Hamilton on repeat.
I say Hamilton in particular, not in that vibe. Like they're a little different, but yeah, that vibe.
I'm not crazy about musical soundtracks. There are some songs that I do enjoy. There's one particularly actually. So this is a funny story. I'm going to segue. I know we're like running a little long.
That's fine.
I'm going to anecdote this. In seventh grade, I want to say, my musical theater director wanted to hold the next musical. The next musical would be The Wiz. Have you heard of this?
I'm familiar, no.
It's The Wizard of Oz, but specifically designed to incorporate black actors.
Pre-Hamilton type shit.
Oh, yeah, this is like Michael Jackson era. When was Michael Jackson? 70s, 80s? 80s, yeah. Right? So this is like 1980s. He was in the movie.
Michael Jackson?
Yeah, Michael Jackson was in the movie. The Wiz. So The Wiz was Wizard of Oz, but with a bit more like social political commentary and themes, and all the actors, all the characters were black. It was specifically designed to get black
people. Half the motherfuckers are not racialized, bro. There's like a lion, a tin man.
Right, that's why they were able to get away with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's crazy shit.
Michael Jackson played the Scarecrow.
Okay.
Right.
He played the Scarecrow.
Exactly. And so Michael Jackson...
He white by the end, I'm sorry.
Like, has a song.
Was he white in it, or...?
No. This is earlier. I think this was the 80s. But he has a song. His intro song as the Scarecrow is called You Can't Win, where he goes all about how, like... And it's very social politically charged. It's like, as a black person or as a Scarecrow, you can't win. Like, you're in a society that's geared against you.
Yeah.
And that was the song that I auditioned with for the musical.
That's crazy.
Yeah, because I wanted that part. I wanted Michael Jackson's part.
Man, he wanted to be MJ.
And in the end, the director switched gears and ended up choosing a different musical to do because only one black person auditioned.
No, that's crazy.
And you can't host The Wiz with a bunch of white kids.
It defeats the whole purpose.
Yeah, it kind of really does.
It defeats the whole purpose. That's crazy.
Yeah, so that's my anecdote. But God is love, transition.
How did we get here?
I can't remember. I couldn't tell you. Fair. You were talking about musical theater.
Yeah.
It transitions perfectly into Mercy, Mercy Me.
Man. So again, this is what I'm saying. Like, I'm not going to front. I almost miss God is Love entirely because of the transitions, bro.
It's a short song as well.
And so like one second I was on the children, and then the next second, Mercy Me.
Very good transitions, especially he gets you, because sometimes he does beat changes within the songs.
Yeah.
And like, so it's some songs will have three different songs within them, and then transitions.
But
transitions,
like, they're smooth, but they feel so natural that, like, you don't question it.
Mm-hmm. And as well, God is Love is a short song. I think it's, like, a minute and a half. Mercy, Mercy Me, this is the track, man. This is, like, the most popular track off the album.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Landslide. I think I'll pull it up right
really?
Now.
Really?
Yeah, look. Oh, well, I guess not. It's the second most popular track.
After What's Going On.
Right.
Oh, but still by a good fair margin.
Oh, yeah. This is one of the defining Marvin Gaye songs.
This thing was pre-iceberg melting type shit. Early iceberg melting.
Sorry?
The job beyond the climate change, beyond the environment.
But he's not talking about the physical environment, again.
Oh, but yes
and
no.
It's the social cultural environment.
Nah, you talk about the fish and the mercury.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
the pick ecology. Up on that. He's for real about the environment on this track.
Oh, I did not pick up on that. I'll have to come back to it.
We're going
to
do like a genius. I got to make sure before I'm like geeking, bro.
Wait, wait, I'll just pull up the lyrics here.
Yeah.
Oil wasted in the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury. Oh, you're radiation underground and in the sky.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, I'm not going to say, like, I think you probably, there might be like some allegory can be made to like pollution of the earth, pollution of your body, your vibe. But like, yeah, it is also just like environment.
Yeah, I picked this up as a political track and not so much an environment track. When did Silent Spring come out?
Fuck is Silent Spring?
Silent Spring is the book that sparked the environmental movement. 1962. Dead ass. So it was a decade before.
What was Silent Spring?
Silent Spring. I'm reading it right now. I'll pass it to you afterwards.
Yeah, I'd be really interested. That's cool,
It's
actually.
A pretty short book. It's essentially this this author, Rachel Carson, did a lot of investigation into pesticide usage, insecticides, and all of these companies that were like using chemicals for agriculture, for products, whatever, and completely misusing them and killing people in the process.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and so she wrote a book about it called Silent Spring, essentially saying how like all these companies and processes were killing the environment directly.
Yeah.
And so Silent Spring alludes to no birds. Yeah. There's no birds in the springtime because they're all dead.
Wow.
And so this came out in 1962, and the EPA was Environmental Protection Agency.
Founded soon after?
Exactly, as a result.
Really? Yeah. It's like, you know the motherfucking book about the food? In Chicago, the meat canning, the jungle, I think it's called.
This one.
This is like way back in the day, I could not tell you, but it's the one in Chicago's like main meat packing plant. And it the FDA was created as a result.
Yeah, this is one of those books that like it is credited with
creates a government art agency. Sparking
the environmental movement, seriously.
That's hyped up, that's cool.
But Mercy Mercy Me is a really fantastic song. Beautiful, deeply soulful singing. Great composition. It's really the dynamic between the guitar, the piano, the drums, and the saxophone, especially the solo in the middle. It's really fantastic. And even though it's not a very long song, it kind of morphs and changes throughout, but always stays very sexy and groovy. There's a gospel singing within the song that is a bit of a callback to the first half of the album. That's the one. So this is the last song on the first side of the vinyl.
Right.
If you were listening to this on a disc. And that gospel singing is like completely a cappella. It's a fantastic closure to that first half. And then the track ends. And then you walk over to your record player. You pick up the disc. You flip it over. You put it down. You hit play. And then you get right on.
You gotta get this shit on vinyl, you know you do.
I really do. This is, if I'm gonna get a vinyl player, this is the first album I'm getting. Man, okay, sorry, did you have anything to say for Mercy Mercy Me? I kinda cut you off there.
No, that was it, bro. Like environmental and I mean I think it's the track, the background vocals is big. But I'm funking on to Right On.
Right On is the funkiest, most stank track on this album.
That's
bro.
Wild to say.
It opens up piano, flute, and a ratchet.
The ratchet that, is crazy.
Yeah.
What is... Okay.
Oh, I should have had you guess that instrument.
Nah, I was going to say... Okay, I used to eat at this Thai restaurant when I was younger, bro. And they had these frogs. The frogs with the sharp ridges
it's
on their back.
That.
And you pass it along. No, it makes a similar sound. You know the ratchet?
Yes.
Like, it goes the... Durant.
Yeah.
And that... Like, I heard that shit. I've heard it in other songs. I've heard it around. But as soon as I just thought the frogs... Durant.
I used to have those as well.
Yeah.
I think we got them in like Mexico or somewhere in Central America.
I don't know why. Like the Thai restaurant just had like stupid amounts littered around the restaurant. Just like on the windowsills and stuff.
That must be really annoying though. If you're like eating your meal and you shit.
Oh, it's like I was like eight. It's like I was the only motherfucker like, you know, playing with them. Like I think most people just like looked at them. They were pretty.
Yeah. But the ratchet. That's really funky.
Is it a real ratchet
that
they swing?
Oh, yeah.
It's a real
but,
ratchet.
It's an instrument ratchet.
Okay.
So it's based off a ratchet, but it's
Is
an
it
instrument
Is it the drum with
version.
The rectangle, like the flag bit almost that comes out?
I don't know.
Think so.
Let's look it up. Ratchet instrument. Oops. Can't spell. I'm drunk.
It's crazy. Oh, no, not
Yeah,
quite.
It looks like that.
Yeah, okay.
But I think the way it works is you hold the metal piece and you spin it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a
ratchet, a crazy.
Oh,
word,
here
bro.
We go. This is the rectangle bit you were talking
about.
Right?
Yeah. That's exactly it.
You hold
yeah.
it and you like. Spin
it's the same mechanism as the frog. It's ridged wood over a flat wood dowel. You know.
Yeah.
See that? I got my instruments down.
Today. Damn it, Maxie!
Yeah.
You're learning.
You know me.
Look at you.
Only the weird ones, bro. I could never look at a trombone.
What? Too basic of an instrument.
Speaking of instruments, Gay kind of takes a backseat. Sorry, Marvin Gaye takes a bit of a backseat here.
I didn't say nothing.
Lets the instruments go forth and uses his own voice as a bit of a compliment to the instrumentation, but still delivering very soulful messages. I think the opening lyrics on here are really striking to me. Some of us are born with money to spend. Some of us are born with races to win. So obviously, you know, drawing a stark contrast there between white people and black people. And he's saying, and those of us who are born or just want to socialize, so in his case, black people that can't run races or play basketball or whatever, they're marginalized, right? They're good for nothing. They just socialize.
I missed this one, bro. I missed those bars on this one.
Run this track back. It's like 7-8 minutes long.
That's what I'm saying. So
it's really long.
But it's halfway he comes in, right?
No, it's closer to the beginning, but he really comes in closer to the halfway. It's a long song, but it does do very well to add energy with the instrumental breaks.
I was gonna say, and I was then that feeling carries more, over
into the verses as well.
More jazzy.
He carries that energy in. At the climax of the funk, like just when you're like, oh, it's like stanky as a motherfucker, it gives out completely.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, completely. And it's just him and his voice. And you think you're like in one of these like transitions, like you said, like between songs, but you're still in the same track.
He just holds you.
And he just talks about love. Like love, sweet love, beautiful love. And you're like, okay, like Marvin, what's going on? And then the ratchet comes back.
The ratchet then, is crazy.
Oh, you get this little, like the last minute of the track, you get this like fantastic surprise. It's just stank, bro. All that motherfucking stank.
I gotta run this shit back, bro, because I'm not gonna lie, I was studying when I was listening to this, bro, because, I don't know, it's finals, bro, I gotta do what I gotta do.
Real.
And so, it's like, I was doing my best to try to, like, give it attention as I was studying, but I gotta run it back.
Yeah.
Give it the full
It's a weird song to listen to on its own, because it's, like, 7 minutes long, but I think I was listening to, like, DJ or radio or something, and it came up, and I was getting to it, bro. I was like, some stank shit.
I gotta take the detour to the hot buttered soul, bro. Did you end up listening to the tape?
I think I got like halfway through it.
Okay, so the whole jaunt is like 4 songs, I think. Right. But the last song is like stupid long, or the second to last song is stupid long.
Yeah, 4 songs.
By the time I get to Phoenix, shit, is 20 minutes. Yeah. And Walk On By a classic. So it's like you start with a classic, you get 2 little bangers, and then you get a 20-minute track. It's half the track is just like sounds and him talking.
Mm-hmm. Just ramblings.
But the injury reserve tape, the weird ass one,
yeah,
is called By the Time I Get to Phoenix. And the first track is By the Time I Get to Phoenix. And it sounds the same. It's either a sample or like a repetition. It's like the same spoken word. It
would be a standard.
This is a weird ass song. I don't think. I'm curious, Ashley. I'm gonna do. What's the bro Jamie called?
Isaac Hayes?
No. Oh, you're right, Ashley. What the fuck?
Yeah,
Glenn standard. Campbell. Wow.
Because I thought I'd seen it somewhere else. 19, what was that? 1967. Which, Isaac Hayes was not long
after.
No,
sorry. The original was 2 minutes and 42 seconds, bro.
Of course.
So
this
so
is his own take. And this was only 2 years afterwards as well. So this is very much like a sample, but an original song.
Yeah. Oop. Yo, we may have had a technical difficulty, un for show,
but we're not gonna bother check in.
So y'all gonna hear us now.
Yeah. Anyways,
but I'm saying the Hot Buttered Soul, the original is 2:40. Isaac Hayes is 18 minutes and 40
right,
seconds.
That's his own artistic.
Yeah. He adds his take. But I'm gonna say that if you do the by the time I get to Phoenix, the injury reserve one. Mm. Like, I think it's definitely the Isaac Hayes version of the original track. I don't know if they got it, but that shit had me... Like, the original, the opening outside has got a...
How long is it?
Is it a vibe? 6 minutes. So it's not right. The full 18, but it's definitely a longer piece. It's got the same spoken word. I'll have to run it back and conclude my
I've got to listen to the... I'll listen to the Isaac Hayes version and also Injury Reserve. I've got to run those.
Yeah.
Coming back to Marvin Gaye. So like I mentioned, we're on the last third of the album. So the transitions are quite seamless. They're smooth. You got this stanky funk coming off of Right On, which is also like Right On, like That's the saying, bro. Right on.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's soul. That's right funk. On, that's right on is like the funk saying.
My man, drunk.
Right on. Anyways, we move into Holy Holy. What was that? I think one time my lease was over and it just started playing on the like radio or something. And I come into my room and she's like, yeah, the Jesus song is playing.
No.
Like, what? Anyways, it's a bit of an unremarkable song.
Back to his choir days.
Bit too heavy on the religious theme and tone. And it's much more gospel focused and centric, which means that if you're not really into that, it's not. Thankfully, it's not too long. So I think it's like 3 minutes long. You can kind of just skip it. But we do get to end the album, thankfully, with Inner City Blues. And this is a very gorgeous track. This is bass, piano, and drums that really take the stage in this track, always behind Marvin's beautiful vocals. And especially on this track, he has a very beautiful falsetto, right? The falsetto is kind of his signature because he's a gospel singer. Falsetto really shines through on this one. And it's just a very beautiful song that encapsulates the whole message of the album. You know, it wraps up those social, political themes and commentary, talking about life as a constant struggle, makes you want to scream, but of course it's juxtaposed with that falsetto, right? It's deep anger, like, oh, I can't pay my taxes, I can't do shit,
that's crazy.
Everybody hates me, but he's saying it with such a falsetto, like, you're not even hearing it.
It's sweet.
It's so sweet.
All right, let me ask you this. We've hit the last thing. You're saying that the song captured all in the album. I'm gonna share what Wikipedia say the concept is, but first, what's your concept?
All right, let me wrap this up.
All right, wrap it up then.
One bar I want to point out. I almost mentioned it. Natural fact is, oh honey, I can't pay my taxes.
Tell us about your tax situation, Emery.
I don't worry about that.
The and then refund.
Closing it off. Almost closing it off. Right, we kind of so again. He plays with transitions so much on this track. You kind of don't pick it up unless you're listening carefully. But he's doing a bit of scatting to to kind of close off Inner City Blues before it transitions into back to the first song.
You playing, bro.
No,
say
so the song ends with a beat change that is a parallel structure callback to the first song. He's repeating that confused message from the first track of who are they to judge us simply because our hair is long.
Oh my God, he didn't even have long hair.
He didn't, but that's the idea, right?
It's the hippies, though.
You know the Denzel Curry line? What is it? It's police judge me because my dreads long or like something like that.
Yeah.
Right.
You think it's a reference direct?
Denzel Curry?
Yeah.
No, I think it's a subtle, you know, it adds to the metaphor, the growing metaphor of like black people have long hair.
But they don't.
They do, of course they do.
But not him, bro. Like,
no, not Marvin Gaye specifically, but like black people have dreadlocks.
I feel you.
They
get God for their locks, yeah.
Exactly. Who are they to judge us?
It could be the hippies in general too, though. He's identifying with the anti-war movement because the white men focused with the civil rights had the long hair too.
That's kind of the beauty of this album is he's not making it too specific to anybody. He's just kind of demonstrating the struggle of the common man.
Yeah.
Obviously specific to
anybody
black people,
the common, yeah.
But anybody kind of fits the mold. And finally, with that callback, with that parallel structure, we're released from this captivating soul spell. And of course, with those familiar hand drums that we heard on the first third and Marvin Gaye's distant scatting.
Hard.
Super hard.
Concept.
For me, the concept was kind of what I kind of outlined already. It's a very deeply social, political, the struggle of the common man, a capture, a snapshot of the times, the war, inflation, job market, the economy, and just what that means for cultures, communities, relationships, individuals, and then Marvin Gaye's own twist on it, which is finding God and having God guide you through it all.
I'm going to give you an A-. Wikipedia talking about is the story of Vietnam War, but
really,
I say that tongue-in-cheek in that
it's the experience as he comes back from the war and is kind of like coming back to everyday life. And so the whole bar of like what's going on, what's happening, brother, is like he hasn't been there for a while. And like, you know, shit has hit the fan back home. But I think you hit all the important points.
That is,
I think,
really interesting.
I think the rest of it is, it's, I mean, like what you named is an exploration. Like the hypothetical, I didn't read the article in depth because I don't want to spoil too much. You know what I mean? I saw that and I was like, oh fuck, I'm already breaking the rules. So I backed out. But I'd assume that if you really like followed through with it, you're getting the same thing. You're getting the walk through his previous communities. You're getting the walk about his take on the war. You're getting like, you know, a lot of them smoking weed in Vietnam. And I think that you kind of get an actor to symbolize like the humanity and the common struggles. And so it's like, it's not just like a specific Vietnam War vet. It's like any bruh of the times, you know?
That's really interesting. And
you have to run it back now, huh?
I will.
I'm gonna have to run it back now too.
I'm already kind of seeing the puzzle pieces come together because this album didn't really make sense in the first sense, where it's like, you have these questions of like, what's going on? What's happening, brother? You should know.
But you coming back. You're coming back,
right? So it's the vet that's been away. He's coming back and he's like seeing all these problems with a new lens. Like this wasn't the case before. What's going on? What's happening? That's fascinating. I'm going to listen again with that perspective.
And then like, you know, read through the Wikipedia article. I finished reading it. I'm going to come back to it eventually too. I might give the album a listen first with that in mind. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was cool.
Fascinating. Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you, Maxime, for that little tidbit though.
Research, bro. Research.
He researched. He the RA for real.
Bro, you know me, man. I'm going to be working more than you this summer on contract hours. 45 a week, baby.
I don't see total. Why that's a pro.
Because I'm not going to do them all.
Fair. But did you read the Economist article talking about Gen Z?
Yeah, that's hard, bro. I was feeling myself. We got to do an on-air dap. I think it's our first one.
Yeah, the Economist article was super interesting. It was like Gen Z are richer than they think they are.
We are the richest generation at our age point.
Yeah, and we don't want to work. We don't like working.
But I honestly, I'm not going to front. I think it's totally valid. I think it's a hard bar because, like, I'm not going to front. I ain't a commie. I'd be looking. They got those communists focused on campus. You seen them?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy shit. Like, genuinely talking about, like, oh, like, meeting, like, April 24th, like, communist party. Imagine if you had a fascist group poster. That should be crazy, bro. You shut down fast.
But
regardless, point being that like I'm rocking with this more leisure time, letting the increases in productivity by technology kind of take the burden off. I think the attitude good.
For one, yes. For two, it is a bit crazy to me because one thing they mentioned in the article was people are less likely to be entrepreneurs, less likely to file patents.
That's true. I saw that.
And that's worrisome because we're now more than ever in an era where we need people like that. We need people that can shift the paradigm and that can help make significant positive change against climate change.
Yeah. Because that do be like the time bomb. Like the rest of society's problem. Like we're fucking ourselves over. But we can like, you know, we can slow down. We can speed up. It's kind of on us. But the climate change be like,
that's it.
Time sensitive.
Boomers
baby.
And Gen X can afford to be a bit lax because they'll die before it gets too bad.
We gonna die too, but our kids are fucked.
Yes and no. We are already feeling the brunt of climate change, and it's only gonna get worse. Like this is our bomb as much as it's our
next generation. Kiribati?
Sorry.
What's the island, bro?
I'm not familiar.
Man, there's like an itty bitty little island nation out in the Pacific.
Yeah, that's all of them.
And they're talking about like 5 years and they're gone, so you know what I mean? And then the question becomes, this is the real interesting one. International maritime law defines like a sovereign bit of ocean around a landmass. And so the question is, if your landmass is gone, do you get any sort of like sovereign territory still?
Wow. Well, there's nobody there to claim it to begin with.
But well, I mean, no, because they'd be like the Kiribati, bro. Because they'd be building off, like the earth. They'd be like building upwards, you know what I mean? No part of Kiribati's land rises more than 2 meters above the ocean.
Oh, yeah, they're fucked.
Yeah. And so the whole shtick is that, like, they're going to try to, like, build polders, pull a Dutch, you know what I mean? Kind of, like, extend life or, like...
Well, then, yes, they do get a claim because that's exactly what China's trying to do.
Yeah, but China shouldn't get a claim. They on some bullshit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fair anyways. Enough. Geopolitical takes with...
what a crazy transition there. So talk about The Economist, like, after all that bullshit. All right.
We got no time, bro. My battery dying.
Yeah, we already went way past the hour.
Favorites, bro. Favorite, least favorite.
Favorites, God. I'm gonna say Mercy, Mercy Me. With the second favorite being right on. Mercy, Mercy Me, I gotta listen back because I was not picking up on the lyrics, but it's such a fantastic track. Least favorite is gonna be Holy Holy. For some reason, this is kind of bothersome to me. Save the Children has the least amount of listens on Spotify. So, but I think it's a banging track.
I was going to say, Save the Children, I think, is my favorite. I think it comes out on top. I really like the spoken word. I think that's what put people off. Because it's the type of thing that's like you don't throw it on a playlist. But you also don't throw it on a playlist.
Right.
Like, you know I mean? No time are you going to be like playing the playlist. Motherfuckers like, you know, grooving, whatever. It's funk, it's soul. And like, no matter how sexy Marvin Gaye is, he's just talking.
Yeah.
But in the album listen through, like on the solo, when you're just like, you know, you're with yourself, or you're with your headphones, you're with your thoughts, I really think it's such a great...
Oh, it fits so well.
Such a great little bit. So yeah. I think that's up there. And it grabbed my attention like nothing else, you know. I think give a second shout out to What's Happening, Brother. I think I liked it better than What's Going On.
It has this like clear, bright aspect to it. Yeah. The xylophone, the vibraphone, which I think is really fun.
And I think you're right. Holy Holy... is gonna fall low for me. Unremarkable. I'm not gonna front. I kind of missed Flying High, but I think I was working. I might have been caught up in that moment. So I don't know. I can't say it stood out as much either.
It fits in the same vibe as the first two tracks, instrumentally wise. So it's like easy to kind of miss if you're not listening closely.
I think I was grooving to What's Going On or What's Happening, Brother, and then I just kind of like.
And it's also that like it. More than any other track on this album, I think the lyrics are trying to. Slip by you.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to have social political commentary, it's another to talk about drugs.
But I'll tell you what's crazy.
And so he doesn't want you to pick up on the drug part.
If I'll tell you what's crazier too though, is if we throw in the real like symbolic, we really go artistic with it, some things are more standout-ish. Like, you know, the problems with the like police brutality, the environment, it really sticks out to you. The lyrics are clear and one feels them because that's how it is when you experience it. But if the drugs are convincing you that it's chill, you're just coping, whatever, it's a little more insidious, you might get the same vibe about the lyrics. You know what I mean? On the surface, you feel good, but you really got to take a step back and realize.
Mm.
Maybe I'm going crazy deep with it, bro.
Maybe a little bit, but I think that's a good closer. Thank you guys so much for coming,
man,
listening to this episode. I know we said it'd be a short one.
And but yeah, no, listen. It's a finale, but we also back, baby.
We back for
this. I'm season gone for four May. Finales. Oh, fuck. Well, fuck it. They can have a little break.
Yeah.
Season four finale / season five beginning episode zero.
Try to do one beginning of May.
I'm not going to be able. I'm not going to be able to.
Second, third? We'll see. Anyways.
Maybe.
But
behind the bar's not over.
We'll be back in June, July at the earliest. Thank you guys so much. I'm
to do some lowbrow shit.
Sorry, what?
Music, bro, finally.
Oh my god.
Chief Keef, what you mean?
Okay, yeah. Alright.
We're gonna listen to this like sociopolitical proper shit. We're gonna listen to some stupid stuff when we get back.
Yeah, I'm with that. Thank you guys. Send us fan mail. Do you have fan mail actually?
I don't have fan mail.
I don't think I have fan mail either.
It's been a minute. I'm sorry. We lost the fan mail.
Yeah. We lost on the mail.
But if you're from Pakistan especially, shoot me an email,
mstjean02@gmail.com. Call your mom.